good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us for a further public hearing scheduled for today. We have members of the public who've identified themselves and would like to be heard, and I want to get to those people in a few moments. Just, I know we have a number of things to discuss, including, you know, things from that have happened in the past and our plans for the future. I want to begin by asking the monitoring team to make some opening remarks and describe their process and their situation. We can begin with you, Ms. Hickey.
Thank you, Your Honor. And thank you for convening us here today. My name is Maggie Hickey, and I'm the independent monitor for the consent decree. I'm also here with other members of the independent monitoring team. Today's public hearing is about listening to the members of Chicago's communities on topics of their choosing related to the consent decree. The independent monitoring team and I would also like to provide a few status updates on our monitoring efforts. Specifically, I will provide an update on our ongoing reporting efforts, and I, along with a few of our associate monitors, will provide a brief update on consent decree efforts related to the Democratic National Convention. First, updates on our reports. As you know, the consent decree requires the independent monitoring team to provide monitoring reports twice a year, community survey reports every 2 years, and at least one comprehensive assessment. On May 23rd of 2024, we filed Independent Monitoring Report 9, which includes our assessments of monitoring efforts between July of 2023 and December 31st of 2023. Most recently, on July 30th, 2024, we provided the parties with our first draft of Independent Monitoring Report 10, which includes our assessment of monitoring efforts between January 1st of 2024 up until June 30th of 2024. We have also been working on our third community survey report, which will provide a summary of the results from a statistically significant survey of Chicago's communities related to policing between April 1st, 2024 and April 22nd, 2024. Originally, our comprehensive assessment was to begin 3 years after the effective date. In March of 2022, however, the City of Chicago and the Office of the Attorney General entered into a stipulation, which, among other things, moved the start date of the comprehensive assessment until June of 2023. In November of 2023, we filed Independent Monitoring Report 8 and Comprehensive Assessment Part 1 of our comprehensive assessment, which included the compliance status of all original requirements, as well as the principal achievements and challenges facing the city's ability to reach full and effective compliance. The following month, at the end of December of 2023, we provided the parties with our first draft of Comprehensive Assessment Part 2. The final report will include our assessment of whether any changes to the consent decree are necessary in light of changed circumstances or unanticipated impact or lack of impact of the consent decree requirements. It will also include our recommendations for any changes to the consent decree that we believe are necessary to accelerate full and effective compliance and achieve and sustain the attendant results. After we file part two of the comprehensive assessment, the City of Chicago and the Office of the Attorney General, as the parties to the consent decree, will ultimately determine what modifications, if any, are made. We continue to work with the parties to finalize these reports. I wanted to report also on the Democratic National Convention, known as the DNC. The independent monitoring team observed the City of Chicago's and the Chicago Police Department's efforts over the last year in preparation for the DNC. I, along with members of my team, were on the ground during the DNC to monitor those efforts, reflecting the requirements of the consent decree. Specifically, Associate Monitor for Recruiting, Hiring, and Promotion and Training, Dr. T. Bowman, and I observed efforts from the Emergency Operations Center. And then subject matter expert and retired Chief of Police, Harold Medlock, and Associate Monitor for the Use of Force Section, Paul Evans, observed officer responses to protests in the field with other members of our team who also observed various activities throughout Chicago during the week. And Associate Monitor Mike Durden, who's the Associate Monitor for Accountability, observed efforts related to the arrest and processing and complaint intake. To be clear, our monitoring efforts are ongoing, and we will continue to monitor how the City of Chicago and the CPD continue to process and investigate complaints and identify lessons learned in various after-action reports. Overall, however, the IMT observed that the city and police department had significantly prepared for the challenge. There were notable successes in our observations, including demonstrated de-escalation tactics, coordinated responses, limited uses of force, officer wellness preparations, and consistent leadership. Importantly, the Chicago Police Department's preparation also included specific efforts by the City of Chicago and the CPD to hear from and work with the Office of the Illinois Attorney General and other members of Chicago communities and stakeholders. While many of these efforts reflected significant disagreements and differing viewpoints, we also observed the CPD incorporating meaningful feedback from those constituents and stakeholders into its policies, trainings, and practices. It is through such transparency, candor, and cooperation that the City of Chicago and the CPD have made the greatest strides towards meeting the intended outcomes of the consent decree in changing policy, training, and that was what we observed last month, their practices. I would like to introduce Associate Monitors Michael Durden and Paul Evans, who will also provide brief summaries of their initial observations regarding the City of Chicago and the CPD's consent decree efforts as they relate to the DNC. With that, I will first turn it over to Associate Monitor Michael Durden.
Thank you, Monitor Hickey. I am Michael Durden, and I'm the Associate Monitor for Accountability Transparency Section of the Consent Decree. Before joining the IMT, I served in the Houston, Texas Police Department for over 30 years, during which time I also served as the Inspector General, led professional standards, and also led criminal investigations. During my week in Chicago, I observed the CPD's efforts related to the arrest and processing of complaint intake. The CPD established a single location where all persons detained in response to a designated coordinated mass arrest were taken for processing. The location was staffed by a varied group of professionals from the Chicagoland area. CPD supervisors and officers were responsible for completing official reports related to detention and arrest. They also had attorneys who were available to provide legal guidance to CPD personnel as needed. In addition, the centers were judges, attorneys from the Public Defender's Office, personnel from the Cook County Detention personnel, and also BIA personnel who were there on site to assist in addressing complaints regarding misconduct if they occurred. In addition to that, the CPD BIA also staged personnel at the United Center and the McCormick Place locations, where I observed the personnel to be ambassadors who responded to numerous requests for information or assistance in a gracious and a professional manner. None of those issues that they were responding to were related to complaints. It was people who were in town and they needed assistance, and they saw a friendly face in a Chicago PD uniform. The successes we observed did not occur in a vacuum. As with any large metropolitan area, the City of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department face evolving and complex challenges. In agreeing to implement the requirements of the consent decree, the City of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department acknowledged that there was room for improvement. As a result, much of the preparation for the DNC began in efforts leading up to and since the start of the consent decree. For example, following the terms of the consent decree, which were agreed to by the parties and informed Chicago communities, the CPD implemented infrastructure to provide annual training, which was then used to provide training for large gatherings, First Amendment activity, and the DNC. As a result, the CPD has now trained an entire tier of officers on how to effectively protect and serve Chicago's communities, consistent with the Constitution and the consent decree, during one of the nation's largest political events. It is our hope and expectation that these efforts should pay dividends, not just for large pre-planned events, but in everyday responses to spontaneous challenges and everyday policing in Chicago. I will now introduce you to Sergeant Monitor Paul Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Durden. Mr. Evans?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Paul Evans. I am the Associate Monitor for Use of Force in the Consent Decree. I was a police officer in the city of Boston for 33 years, the last 10 as the police commissioner. I then spent 4 years as the director of the police standard unit in the Home Office in the United Kingdom. As Monitor Hickey referenced, I, alongside retired Chief Harold Medlock and other members of the independent monitoring team, spent the week in Chicago during the DNC monitoring and observing the protests and how they proceeded. As Monitor Hickey indicated, we greatly appreciate the Chicago Police Department's willingness to work with the IMT, the Office of the Attorney General, and the Coalition during this entire process, including the Chicago Police Department's ongoing efforts to address and implement recommendations from our 2021 special report. This included for example, updating training and policies in areas like the use of force, the use of OC spray, batons, First Amendment policies, body-worn cameras, supervision, coordinated responses to large gatherings, including arrest, and importantly, use of force reporting. Along with other members of our team, we personally observed many of the revised policies and corresponding training pay dividends. For example, the Chicago Police Department's emphasis on de-escalation was observed from the positioning of officers to the officers using time as a tactic to ease tension and de-escalate conflicts without the use of arrests or force. We observed Chicago's Police Department's leadership emphasizing de-escalation as a goal and line supervisors facilitating de-escalation to ensure the safety of protesters and officers. We also observed cooperation and coordination efforts between the department and the protesters. They were given space to do their own de-escalation amongst themselves. I observed on many occasions the protesters, there would be conflicts among the protesters or counter-protesters where they were resolved by the protesters themselves, and the department gave them ample opportunity to do that. Naturally, there are challenges in any event of this magnitude, but most importantly, we observed the Chicago Police Department identify challenges and make the necessary adjustments. On the first day, during a large march, there was a lack of officers during the rear of the protest. That was addressed in all the rest of the days, and that's something we saw consistently. Where there were possible issues, they were readily addressed. In March of this year, Deputy Monitor Rodney Monroe addressed Your Honor, expressing our optimism for the cooperation that was being demonstrated by the City of Chicago, the Chicago Police Department, the Office of the Attorney General, and other stakeholders in Chicago's community to prepare for the DNC. And in comparison to the response to the protest and unrest in 2020, we did not observe any deviations from the consent decree during the Democratic National Convention that would warrant a special report at this time. Instead, we will report on how the City of Chicago and the Chicago's Police Department's efforts relate to demonstrated compliance in our independent monitoring report number 11, which will address January of this year to June 30th of this year. While we will continue to monitor Chicago's Police Department's ability to identify and respond to lessons learned, there is reason to believe that the ongoing and tireless consent decree efforts by members of the parties in Chicago's communities are making a difference. That the present-day Chicago Police Department were better prepared for the DNC, and that certainly before the consent decree was instituted in February of 2019. Thank you, Your Honor.
And Your Honor, I have just a couple additional comments.
Sure.
I just want to thank Associate Monitors Durden and Evans, and I wanted to say that we look forward to hearing from the public speakers today. We also look forward to reviewing all written community feedback, which the court is accepting through 4:30 p.m. this Friday coming up. For those who have not yet submitted comments and would like to do so, there are instructions on how to submit comments in the court's order setting this hearing, as well as on our website, www.cptmonitoringteam.com. For those who are unable to speak today and who are unable to submit written comments, we note that the consent decree requirements, there are also additional channels for community input, including direct channels with CPD. And we will continue to monitor and report on the city and CPD's efforts and ability to create, maintain, and utilize those opportunities for community input and engagement. And as always, our website contains information on how community members can contact the IMT with any ideas, feedback, or questions at any time. We thank those community members and stakeholders who have already reached out. Again, I thank the parties, the court, and the community members for their time and attention to the well-being of Chicago.
Thank you. Thank you to the monitor and to the associate monitors. We appreciate the comments you've made, and we appreciate the efforts that you're making to move forward with the consent decree. I think we're ready to hear now from the Office of Attorney General, and Ms. Grebe has indicated she's going to be making some opening remarks.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Grebe. I'm the Deputy Chief of the Civil Rights Bureau at the Illinois Attorney General's Office. First, thank you to the court and the independent monitoring team for continuing to hold these quarterly hearings for members of the public to provide their testimony on the progress of reform. I, along with my colleagues on the call today, deeply appreciate the candor and the commitment of those who have signed up to speak today and submit written comments. Our team of attorneys listens carefully to the experiences shared in these public hearings, and they inform our work every day. Because today is about hearing from people who wish to share their experiences with policing and police reform in Chicago, I'll keep my remarks brief. In November of 2022, this court held an in-person hearing where we heard dozens of community members speak about their interactions with Chicago police officers. Coming near the end of the pandemic, that was the first in-person hearing seeking community member testimony since the consent decree was signed by Judge Dow in 2019. Since that time, nearly 2 years ago, this court has held several more in-person and virtual hearings to hear from the public about whether and how reform is happening on the ground. We recognize that speaking at these hearings is hard. It takes time away from work, school, and family. It requires sharing a deeply personal or traumatic experience, and it may be a chance to express frustration at this process. But transparency about the progress of required reforms from the police department and feedback about CPD in this public forum are critical. These hearings are one way to share input with the court, the monitoring team, the department, and our office. And to ensure success for one of the main goals of the consent decree, building community trust, the city and CPD must continue to engage the public every step of the way. For example, during beat meetings, meetings of the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability, district council meetings, through targeted community engagement efforts by the Office of Community Policing, and through listening to those people most impacted by the actions of CPD officers every day. We appreciate so much the report of the independent monitoring team on their observations of the Democratic National Convention. We commend the men and women of CPD who spent months and months developing and revising policies, providing extensive training to thousands of officers, and preparing for the real challenge of maintaining public safety while protecting the public's First Amendment rights. And we also commend the coalition and other community stakeholders who, along with our office, provided critical input into these policies and the department's training. Yes, that input came later in the process than it should have. But when the CPD sat down to discuss these policies and trainings with people who could be directly impacted, the conversations were productive. And from our office's perspective, represented good faith from CPD leadership to listen and to learn. Your Honor, this work in many ways is the quiet work of police reform. It may not grab headlines, but it shows diligent, consistent, and reflective work across the department and in dialogue with community members directly impacted. During the DNC itself, our office received reports from the independent monitors team on the ground, and we've heard preliminary reports from the city and CPD. We look forward to hearing more from the department this fall about its own after-action review and the review from its federal partners about the DNC. As CPD prepared for the convention, we were encouraged that it made changes to policies and practices in response to the independent monitor's findings and the city's own Office of Inspector General findings regarding the protests in the summer of 2020. CPD, as you've heard from the associate monitors today, took stock of where it should change its practices and what it could do better. And we hope to see this commendable progress and the department being a learning organization continue as we move forward with all of the aspects of consent decree implementation. Finally, Your Honor, I want to provide updates to the court and to the public on two very important policies that our office has reported on in previous status hearings. First, over the past several months, our office and the CPD have exchanged drafts and written comments and had several meetings to discuss the department's officer-involved shooting and death investigations policy. In fact, our team and CPD and the monitoring team met just last week to discuss bringing this critical policy in compliance with the consent decree. And second, at the end of August, the department submitted to our office and the independent monitoring team a revised draft of its body-worn camera policy in response to this court's ruling earlier this summer about the public safety investigation questions. Our team is reviewing this revised policy and intends to provide written feedback to the department this month. These are just two examples of the many meetings and policies and trainings and progress updates our team and the monitor have with the city and the department on a near daily basis. We also continue to work on, for example, crisis intervention, accountability, officer wellness, and all of the sections of the consent decree. Your Honor, we thank all of the speakers today in advance for their time, for sharing their experiences, and for their commitment to seeing change in the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grebe. I appreciate those comments. Ms. Bagby or Mr. Slagle, will one of you want to speak to us about situation in the city? And I believe the superintendent is with us as well.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. My name is Jennifer Bagby. I'm the Deputy Corporation Counsel of the Public Safety Reform Division. And we want to thank you all to those who have joined, and we look forward to hearing comments from the public about what they are seeing and feeling on the ground. Over the past few months, CPD, in collaboration with the monitor and the attorney general, completed the policy and training necessary to make the DNC a success. And additionally, the city and CPD provided opportunities to dialogue with the public, with groups who were interested in exercising their First Amendment rights and other interested community members in a number of information sessions that were held in the weeks leading up to the DNC. All while preparing for the DNC, CPD continued the work of reform in the policy development and policy revisions, both the policies you heard Ms. Greed mention, as well as policies concerning interacting with persons with disabilities, search warrant policies, the investigatory stop and ordinance, loitering ordinance policies. CPD continued to administer the 40 hours of annual in-service training to members for 2024. And continue to develop the curriculum that will be necessary to deliver that training in 2025, all while doing the work of reform while continuing to keep the streets safe. And I'm going to turn it over to Superintendent Larry Snelling for the rest of the city's time and remarks.
Thank you, Ms. Bagby. Superintendent, we're happy that you're with us and would be happy to hear from you.
Absolutely. Good afternoon, Jed, and good afternoon to everybody on the call. And let me start by thanking Jim Bagby and Alice Salego for the work that they've been doing with this. Just been great team members. You've heard a lot of compliments to CPD about the work that's being done. And I would have to start off by saying that could not have been done without the partnership, the teamwork with the independent monitoring team and the office of the attorney general and their cooperation in all of this. The input, was great. The back and forth conversation, the way that we decided to get the training rolling out and then the agreement upon that and then the input along the way. It was great to have the experience that we have with the independent monitoring team. And I really have to point out associate monitors, Michael Durden and Paul Evans, for their feedback. Just the information has been incredible when it comes to the feedback. Without that partnership, I don't know that we're here right now. I don't know if the training is as effective as it was, because there were multiple things that were necessary in order for this to be a success. First thing is training. Without the training, nothing else is possible, because we could have the greatest leadership in the world, but if our officers are not properly trained, if they don't have the proper information, what are you actually leading with? Officer wellness was a key component here, making sure that our officers were prepared, number one, with information, but number two, making sure that our officers knew that there was someone out there, making sure that there was the accountability factors, but also that they were eating, they were hydrated. This is one of the ways to keep anxiety down with officers so that they don't overreact or respond in a manner which we're not looking for. So all of these things were great. They greatly impacted the success of the DNC. So I can't say enough. I have to thank everybody on the call for the partnership. We also met with the coalition a couple of months ago, and we sat down, had a conversation with them, and I thought it was fruitful. We had a very good conversation back and forth. And just because we may disagree on small things, it doesn't mean that we have to be disagreeable. And I think that was very helpful. So the feedback from everyone was very important. It's going to be even more important moving forward, because although this was a great experience, I don't imagine that everyone sees it the same way. So we're willing to hear the feedback from any and everybody in any ways that we can improve. So we're not spiking the football here. What we're looking at is the opportunity to grow from this. So it's not just about the DNC, but it's about how we move forward with every single thing that we do now when we're dealing with our communities. Because long after the DNC is gone, we're still policing in a city where people have concerns. And we want to make sure that we address those concerns. And we're listening to feedback from everyone to get to the bottom of what we need to do to rebuild the relationships between the police and the community. So with that, I won't take up too much more of your time. I'm ready to hear the feedback and some of the public comments that I know are going to be helpful to us. So we're just going to continue to work. Again, I can't say enough about the partnership right now between CPD, the OAG and the IMT. I mean, it's just been magnificent. I see us moving forward with this and just continuing to grow and, you know, finding compliance within the consent decree. That's all I have to say, Jeff. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Snelling, and thank you again for being with us. I think it is very important that you're here to hear from the members of the public, just as I am, because I think we all realize that whether and how reform happens depends to a great degree on the leadership, and your commitment to the process is absolutely critical, and I don't think that can be I don't think that can be overstated. I know that we have people from the coalition that would like to be heard, and specifically Ms. Block is, I believe, with us and has an opportunity to make a statement right now. If you're here, go right ahead, Ms. Block.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor, and good afternoon to the court, the monitoring team, the city, the Attorney General's office, and all the members of the public. Thank you very much for holding this hearing and inviting us to speak today. My colleague, Sheila Betty, was stuck in court on another matter, and she apologizes that she's not able to speak on behalf of the coalition. So I will do my best, and Ms. Betty will submit her remarks in writing later. I am going to discuss the Democratic National Convention, and then I'm going to turn to the issue of CPD's services for people with limited English proficiency, which is a topic that you are going to hear from a number of community members about later this afternoon. So the speakers earlier in the call talked about a number of facets of CPD's performance during the Democratic National Convention. And we would like to remind and emphasize that it took significant pressure from the coalition and other members of the community to get CPD to where they ultimately wound up during the DNC. In terms of revising policies and training. In February, CPD released a draft mass arrest policy without any advance notice to the coalition or to the public. And that draft violated the First Amendment and the consent decree in a number of ways. It would have allowed the police to interfere with constitutionally protected protests, to make illegal arrests without probable cause. It would have allowed CPD to not record many uses of force against community members. It was significantly problematic. And the coalition therefore filed an emergency enforcement motion seeking to pause the mass arrest policy and to fix it before it went into effect. The court ordered expedited negotiations to resolve our enforcement motion, and the outcomes of these negotiations are summarized in a status report that the coalition filed on June 27th. But in brief, because of the work that we did together, the city did significantly revise the mass arrest policy in response to our concerns, although they didn't adopt all of our requested changes. The city then agreed to allow the coalition to watch a mock training of at least a portion of the training that officers were given in advance of the DNC, which we appreciated. And we filed an evaluation of that training in a status report that was dated August 8th. We noted several problems with the training, including that it didn't clearly tell officers when arrests were and were not allowed during First Amendment protected protests. As far as we know, the coalition's comments haven't been incorporated into CPD's training, or at least they weren't before the DNC, partly because of the press of time. But we hope that our comments will be adopted and incorporated in the future. As Ms. Bagby referenced, in the weeks leading up to the convention, the city held three community meetings to respond to questions from organizations who are planning to protest and the lawyers representing them. We agree these meetings were very productive, although I think it bears mentioning that they might not have happened at all without pressure from the U.S. Department of Justice. After all of this work, our worst fears about what could have happened during the DNC didn't come to pass. But it shouldn't take an enforcement motion and 5 months of negotiations and pressure from the coalition and the Department of Justice and others for CPD to simply follow the Constitution and the consent decree. And as Ms. Greed mentioned, it shouldn't have been such a scramble. CPD waited far too long to get community feedback, to engage with the coalition. And as a result, the process was not as robust and did not incorporate as much community feedback as it could have if the community was brought into the conversation earlier. And as the superintendent understands, there were some problems that the community is going to discuss later in the hearing with police actions during the DNC. Some of those issues include that people who were arrested had difficulty getting access to attorneys. There were COPA complaints that were made. And there was simply a vast and overwhelming police presence during First Amendment protected demonstrations that could be intimidating and could have scared people away from coming out to exercise their First Amendment right to protest. And these and other issues you're going to hear more about from members of the community later this afternoon. We welcome Superintendent Snelling's offer to use this as a growth opportunity and to conduct an after-action review. We strongly urge CPD to make that after-action review public and to address all of the comments that you'll hear today and any other feedback received through COPA complaints or other methods of feedback that the community may give about the DNC in that after-action review. And we think most importantly, it's important to keep perspective. The real test for CPD to meet is whether police treat every person in Chicago who interacts with them with the same respect that for the most part was evident in the way department members acted during the DNC. This means showing the same type of restraint and de-escalation during routine traffic stops and street stops, during other demonstrations that are not part of the DNC, during interactions with all community members in all neighborhoods of Chicago, when the news cameras aren't rolling and when elected officials aren't watching. In all of these circumstances, police also need to de-escalate and treat people with dignity and respect and humanity, regardless of their backgrounds, and to respect every person's rights under the Constitution and the laws of the United States and the state of Illinois. If CPD can accomplish this goal to police every day the way they policed for the most part during the DNC, then true progress will have been made. Now, let me turn briefly to the policy on police interactions with people with limited English proficiency, which is a topic that you will hear about from some of our community members today. This has been raised during the last two quarterly hearings, and the court has heard from members of the community that CPD needed to update its policy on providing services to people who have limited or no ability to speak or read or write in English. The policy hadn't been revised since 2012. Over the summer in July, CPD did release a draft of the policy for public comment. And the draft says it's a work in progress. And we agree that some improvement is still needed, although we do appreciate CPD giving attention to this crucially important issue. The coalition has several recommendations for strengthening the current draft of the policy. First, children and family members should never be asked to interpret for other people during police interactions. Asking children to interpret is traumatizing to them and their families. Children might not understand what's happening and might not have the vocabulary in any language to interpret in these circumstances. Asking untrained adult family members or friends to interpret during police encounters also can result in inaccuracies and violations of privacy if confidential information is discussed. Second, there should be a test to certify bilingual officers for proficiency to interpret in another language. CPD says that they're working on this, and we are glad to see that, but it's long past time. Third, CPD needs to educate the public on their rights to have an interpreter and to have written materials translated into a language that they can understand. CPD also needs to educate the public that they can make complaints when CPD doesn't provide information in a person's native language, where there's inaccurate interpretation or other issues with language access. And finally, you'll hear from our speakers today that CPD needs to engage much more broadly with members of the public including the wealth of Chicago organizations that serve immigrant communities, to improve how CPD serves people with limited English proficiency. Thank you very much, Your Honor. The Coalition appreciates your time and the opportunity to raise these critically important issues today.
Thank you, Ms. Black. And I want to thank the Coalition. We I think of you in part as the conscience, and we need that. We're not going to be able to make everybody happy. We're not going to make the public completely happy. We're not going to make the police happy. The Coalition won't always be happy. But it really, we need every voice to be heard and to be heard in an assertive and confident way. And that we very much appreciate the time that you've put in and will continue to put in, because it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, and we will make progress, but it's not going to be easy. And we need everybody. We need all the hands on deck that we've got. So thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're ready. It's we're just a little bit early, but we're ready to begin hearing from our community speakers. So if those of you who are scheduled to be heard this afternoon are ready to go, we can certainly begin calling on you. I think the first name on the list that I have is Rose Joshua. I don't know whether that person is with us. If Rose Joshua, if you are here, you're welcome to be heard at this point.
Maggie, this is Anthony Ray Sepulveda. She hasn't accepted the promotion or the unmuting. Perhaps we could circle back.
Okay, that's fine. I think the next name I have on the list is Bobby Kennedy. And again, we're getting a little bit of an early start, so if these people aren't quite ready, I understand it. But Bobby Kennedy, if you are here, we could hear from you now.
All I want to say, first off, I have no complaint with the CPD. And Superintendent Snelling has done an excellent job with the DNC, and there's no complaints on this side. My complaint is I sent Judge, as I dropped off some paperwork for the affinity program, mm-hmm. and I imagine you had a chance to review it. So anyway, my question was, I keep talking to people, I want to find out, there's right now we have these, I call them the rainbow cars, but they're pride cars out there, and the affinity program puts them out, and they say they're with disenfranchised communities. I tried to dig find out what exactly is disenfranchised communities, and from the consent decree, it comes out as Black and Hispanic communities as disenfranchised. No gay communities, no Chinese communities. But if you read my paperwork, somebody applied for the, of course, the rainbow cars are out there, and I sent you a picture of that just so you knew what it was talking about. But also the, let me see, the Chinese that applied for a car, and it was never passed and never rejected. And what I'm finding out was this was all done under Lori Lightfoot, okay? So I'm just putting that out there, is that if they did what they say it does, it put so many police cars that are out there, nobody would know what a police car is. But I'm just saying, is there anything in the consent decree that says, or federal mandate that says you have to have cars that identify with the neighborhoods, like the gay community or the Black community or the Chinese community? And what is a disenfranchised? How do you come up with a disenfranchised community? That's my question. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah. And I can hear you, and I'm aware of the question. I did see your correspondence on this. I don't know the answer to the question about how somebody is determined to be a member of a disenfranchised community or not. And I don't know exactly, I got the impression that you don't object to the inclusion of the rainbow cars, but you're wondering why there aren't others. Is that right?
Well, first off, it started with the fact I'm conservative and I don't like to see the police car. I say I like to see one police car for the whole city. I don't want to see lots of police cars. And for years, I've seen the rainbow police car with the shield on the side, and that's always bothered me. So I wanted to find out. And of course, Superintendent Snelling seen me at many of these meetings, and this is where I'm at now. And I'm just trying to find out is, okay, first off, I was against having that car out there. But then I found out from talking to people like at the Glenn Brooks and them at the affinity program, that there was this disenfranchised, that's always the buzzword, disenfranchised communities, is that there's a pro where you got to have a car that relates to a disenfranchised community. So, but the mandate never, it identified Blacks and Hispanics as disenfranchised. And so the question is Where did all this other stuff come from? And why aren't there any other cars out there? Or is this something that Lori Lightfoot just slipped in that's not legal? And because she was, you know, like I said, no cars have been approved except for the Pride car, the gay community. That's it. And it's been going on how many years now? So I'm just wanting to get to the bottom of this. Nobody's given me an answer and where it came from. So I've come to you guys.
Yeah, and I don't know whether our group here is going to be in a position to answer it. Not sure about that.
Well, I mean, you can always get back to me. I mean, I don't know the. I mean, from what I'm not a lawyer or anything like that. But from what I've read, the consent federal mandate only covered Black and Hispanic communities. But and so who decides what's a disenfranchised community? A politician like Lori Lightfoot? Or does a federal judge decide, or any politician? I don't know.
Well, thank you for raising that question with us, and I'm hoping that we will be able to get an answer to you. So I appreciate your time on that. I don't have the answer to it myself, and I'm not sure whether people on this call do, but I know that we'll look into it, and if there is an answer, try to get back to you on that.
Okay, well, y'all, email me or just write me a letter. Just curious.
Won't be coming from me, so I can't answer that question, but I hope that someone will respond to you, and exactly how that happens, I don't know.
Okay. All right, then. Well, that's it. And again, I'll just say I have no beef with the CPD, and I think Superintendent Snowing has done an excellent job, so I'll just throw that out there.
Good, thanks. I do want to hear from both Rose Joshua and Sherry Nolan. I'm going to move on. Is Ellen Gutowski with us?
My name is Ellen Gutowski, and I would like to speak to my experience from the August 20th protest outside of the Israeli consulate and speak to the interactions that I witnessed and observed and experienced with the CPD. And something that happened to me that evening and I witnessed was a level of aggression and combativeness and repeated tactics to prevent protesters from maneuvering throughout that demonstration. As soon as I had pulled up to this protest, there was, or even on the way, there was taunting and intimidation from the police who were surrounding the consulate and leading up to the consulate. They had their batons out. Everyone was in full gear, and it just created a feeling of intimidation for protesters, including myself, who was arriving. And once the speakers had ended and the crowd was trying to disperse, we had moved on to the sidewalks and essentially were then thrown into a game of cat and mouse with the police officers who were present. At one point, we were cornered on a sidewalk. The group was trying to leave, and I'm communicating. They're asking, "Where are you going? Where are you going?" I say, "We're leaving to go to the train station. We're going to the Quincy Brown line." And at one moment, a white officer, a white shirt, turned to another and said something to the extent of, "Let's end this, let's wrap this up," and then mass arrests began. And we were unable to leave. And the crowd, again, was trapped between and was being kettled between officers and had no chance to act on any sort of orders to disperse. And essentially, this continued for quite a bit of time. And throughout this, there were a lot of arrests that seemed targeted. At one point, there was a Black man who was like ripped from the crowd. It was noticeable that he was targeted amongst the other protesters, and he ended up with a large gash on his face. And so that was a concerning level of aggression that I had witnessed during these kettling attempts. And it felt intentional and just in line with some of the racist history of the CPD that was especially alarming. And ultimately, my experience is that CPD's presence was escalatory at this event and was calculated to intentionally harm and repress those who are standing up against the genocide in alignment with their First Amendment right. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gutowski. I appreciate your comments. I'm going to turn next on the list to Krista Noel.
Hi, Judge. Hi, everyone. I'm definitely not here to say good things about CPD. That wouldn't be my job. I did want to speak about what our number one issue with them and goal is, which is sanctity of life, right? And I want to keep talking about that until they stop killing us. There have been three killings this year. It's up again. One was in defense of others, so it's justified. And now we have two unnecessary deaths, two Chicagoans. Dexter Reed, which was shot at 98 times, which is, you know, just completely unacceptable. It is the definition of excessive. And Snelling and Kirsten's fight is worthy of a Netflix series. I mean, really, they are going at it over Dexter Reed. I think it could be a Netflix series. The third death is David Curry. And it was totally unnecessary death, too, as he was pushed down by a cop during a foot chase. And additionally, we have a video of a cop pointing their gun outside a squad as it's driving by. She's just pointing her gun at people on the street. And that basically means to me that CPD's policy on foot chases and gun pointing is not getting through to the folks on the street, right? So they're writing policy, but it's not getting through to the people on the street. It's not translating. So I want you to prepare, Judge, to sanction them. You know, we heard a lot at our last testimony and meeting that the consent decree was falling flat. And one of the reasons why people think it's falling flat, even though it's not falling as flat as some people would like everyone to believe, one of the reasons is that they are not getting fined and they are not getting sanctioned. And I believe at the very end when you were speaking, you said that the testimony gave you things to think about as well. So I really want you to prepare to sanction them and fine them for the fact that it is not getting through to the street, okay? And this is where it needs to get through to. As far as Guy on disenfranchisement and the history of the consent decree, I love it when they ask about the history of the consent decree. It takes a DOJ investigation, and the DOJ did an investigation under the Obama administration and found that the Chicago Police Department had racist practices and procedures and policies against the Black and Brown community. They found it to be disparate treatment. Usually when you use the term disenfranchised, you're talking about voting. But in this particular case, I guess you're talking about privileges. And we know for a fact that there are certain privileges that the Black and Brown community, as well as the Asian and the LGBT community, doesn't have. So I want to just point out the fact that they are involved in the consent decree, the Asian community specifically, as far as language is concerned, the LGBTQIA community, as far as treatment is concerned. They actually have paragraphs in the consent decree. So that is how the consent decree was set up. Lori Lightfoot has nothing to do with the consent decree, except that she— no, she wasn't in office. I think Rahm was in office when it was written. So your issue with a rainbow car is, you know, there could be other cars out there if you want other cars. I'm sure Chief Snelling would be willing to do that. Snelling, I'm sorry. As far as the meeting is concerned that we had, it was a light meeting, I must admit. It was kind of fun. We were swapping stories. And I think that we came to— this is the meeting with Superintendent Snelling, NAACP Coalition, and members at CPD headquarters. It was nice. It was nice. I have to admit to that. But I don't want anyone to think that CPD used to have a relationship with the community. CPD has never had a relationship with the community. The 1919 race riots, where no one was arrested, and the only person who was shot and killed was a Black police officer in the police force. And that was never, no one ever knows what happened and who shot him. There's never been a relationship. So you have to start the relationship with us. You can't be looking back as if there was one at some point in time. There never was. You know, you used to kill more people, lots more people, and be abusive to a lot more people. But there was never a relationship. And I don't want you to come from that point of view. I want you to come from the point of view that this is you trying to start a relationship with the community. That's important. You can't look back and say, oh, you know, make Chicago police great again. They were never great, you know, so you have to understand this is the start of that. And it's going to take a lot of work to start it. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Noel. I appreciate those comments and appreciate your interest in this process. Greg Collins, I believe, is next on the list.
I'm coming to talk. I want to talk about the way back in when I was growing up as a kid, the police had threatened me and my family. I do have a problem with them because they're not doing their job. They're attacking young, innocent Black men out in my community. You know, I have a serious problem with that. I work with Chicago Creed trying to save these Black men, do 50 and one fourth again. And the next thing you know, I'm out here trying to save them and they harassing these kids, pulling them out of cars. And the kids that's really doing violence, they don't say nothing to. The kids that's the problem, they don't bother. But the people that's citizens and just trying to change their life, they always harassing and stuff. This is what I have to say about it. I see it every day. You know, my son was a victim of one harassment. You know, because he didn't want the police coming into the house. They didn't have no warning or nothing. They tried to run through my door. I'm taking my other kids out to the museum and stuff. And at the time I was doing that, the police was trying to run up in my door. My son said, no, y'all don't have a warrant. What's going on? There was nothing going on, but they attack people that's innocent. This is all I have to say. They attack the innocent ones. But the people that's the problem, they not bothered. They're not bothering with the problem. It's like on my block, they know what the problem is, but they're not dealing with the problem. They're dealing with us, people that's not doing anything.
Does that conclude your sentence, Mr. Collins?
What'd you say, ma'am?
That includes your statement?
Yes, ma'am, because...
Thank you very much for participating and being with us this afternoon. I appreciate that.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I just say something had to be done.
Right.
So, you know, I live in a community where I watch people get beat up and stuff like that. I got beat up. And when they said they was going to kill my mother and my family, if I call internal affairs on them, you know, they told me this literally out their mouth. So I don't know what to think about it. I just don't deal with them.
I thank you for bringing these issues to our attention. We need to know about what's going on. And it's helpful to hear your statement.
Yeah. They pulling innocent people over in cars. That's not doing nothing. But then they cars that run the stop signs, they let go. They don't say nothing. Cars that's doing legal things, they don't bother. Well, thank y'all anyway for hearing me out anyway.
Well, thank you, Mr. Collins.
Yes, ma'am.
Is Jessica Estrada with us? Okay, great. We're ready to hear from you, Ms. Estrada, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Jessica Estrada. I was born in Mexico, and Spanish is my first language. I'm an organizer with Communities United, which is part of the coalition. I'm here to speak about the Chicago Police Department's draft policy on police interactions with people with limited English proficiency. We're pleased that CPD finally updated the draft after 12 years, but the policy needs improvement. And officers need training and certification to serve all the people who live in this wonderful diversity. Any documents provided by the Chicago Police Department must be translated according to the language needs of the community. In my experience in community organizing, we're required to understand the community, the culture, the challenges,
the different languages that are spoken in each community. For example, in Albany Park, I was an organizer in Albany Park. I found certified Spanish interpreters, Arabic interpreters, Korean interpreters, and even American Sign Language interpreters, which they are very hard to find. If I'm able to do this in one community, why can't the Chicago Police Department do the same? The Language Line app is not a good substitute. Sometimes the app doesn't work, and in an urgent situation, it is necessary to speak with someone in person. CPD should hire bilingual officers that are certified and assign them to the neighborhoods where their language skills are needed. They can do this by conducting an annual community assessment of languages spoken in each police district and adjusting every 1 or 2 years. Beyond language access is the issue of cultural competency. Officers need to understand the communities where they work. This should be part of their formal performance, review process. Each district can ask community members to evaluate officers and or interpreters on cultural competency and language services after each interaction. I'm not just saying this as an organizer, but someone that lives in the community. Let me share my experience last Wednesday. I was getting ready to sleep. I had my windows open, and I heard someone screaming fuego, which means fire in Spanish. I put on my shoes. I went outside and followed the screaming. In the corner of Belle Plaine and San Luis in the Albany Park community, in the 17th district, I saw a crowd of 10 to 13 people yelling in Spanish, trying to stop someone from stealing a car. It was the third time this has happened to them. A police officer arrived trying to de-escalate the situation, but unfortunately, her Spanish was weak, and the crowd grew frustrated. The environment felt very tense. People were holding kitchen knives, feeling unheard and angry. Despite the chaos, I wasn't afraid. I knew they were desperate, but not violent. If there were more Spanish interpreters, certified interpreters, supporting the officers, the situation could have been diffused more effectively. This highlights a major issue. Police officers should be certified and recertified regularly in languages that they serve, just like the Chicago Public School bilingual teachers. Also, better ratios of certified interpreters or bilingual officers to community members would have made a difference that night. The officer who was trying to provide Spanish interpretation and service at the same time was likely overwhelmed, and even she told the crowd to stop calling the police. To me, that is a clear sign of frustration. The frustration was visible both from the crowd and the officer. I ask, could the Chicago Police Department lead the nation in improving limited English proficiency policies? Could CPD collaborate with community leaders, organizations like ours, who are ready to make the change? We're ready, and we ask the Chicago Police Department to commit to a genuine effort to collaborate with us. Listen to our concerns and suggestions and incorporate them in policies and practices, or fully explain to us why they won't. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mrs. Rod. I appreciate that. For somebody not born in the United States, you speak without an accent. It's fun to listen to you. Let's see if we can hear from Merced Alday.
Hello, my name is Imani. I'm calling on behalf of the coalition, and I have Merced Alday and Nancy as the interpreter.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Buenas tardes, señoría. Mi nombre es Merced Alday. Soy madre latina de cuatro hijos, organizadora y líder de Comunidades Unidas, que forma parte de la coalición. Primero quiero informar a la Corte que mi idioma principal es el español. No hablo, no leo, no entiendo mucho inglés. Me gustaría comenzar agradeciendo al Departamento de Policía de Chicago por finalmente actualizar la política LEP. Después de 12 años, sin embargo, aún queda un importante margen de mejora.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Merced Alday. I am a Latina mother of four children and an organizer and leader with Communities United, which is part of the coalition. First, I want to inform the court that my primary language is Spanish. I do not speak, read, or understand much English. I would like to begin by thanking the Chicago Police Department for finally updating the LEP policy. After 12 years, however, there remains significant room for improvement.
La policía debe servir a todas las personas y comunidades de Chicago por igual, incluidos aquellos que hablan principalmente español y otros idiomas. He compartido mi testimonio ante la Corte antes sobre un incidente en el que varios carros de policía llegaron a mi casa en medio de la noche buscando a mi hijo. Lo buscaban porque no aparecía en la Corte. Pero, ¿cómo podríamos haber sabido que mi hijo debía presentarse en el tribunal cuando no podíamos entender el papeleo?
Police needs to serve all people and all communities in Chicago equally, including those who primarily speak Spanish and other languages. I have shared my testimony in court before regarding an incident where multiple police cars arrived at my home in the middle of the night looking for my son. They were looking for him because he didn't appear in court. But how could we know, we would have known that my son was required to appear in court when we couldn't understand the paperwork?
Cuando arrestaron a mi hijo, le pregunté a la policía para obtener información sobre dónde lo llevaban a él. Un oficial me dio su tarjeta y me dijo que podía llamar para saber dónde lo tenían detenido. Llamé repetidamente, pero nadie respondió. Finalmente me enteré de que habían llevado a mi hijo hacia la calle 26 y California por no presentarse ante un tribunal. Durante ese tiempo estaba aterrorizada. Sentí como si mi hijo hubiera desaparecido. Y dada nuestra experiencia previa con la policía, la forma agresiva en que mostraron una foto de mi hijo en medio de la noche, no estaba segura de volver a verlo.
When my son was arrested, I asked the police for information about where they were taking him. An officer gave me his card and told me I could call to find out where they were holding him. I called repeatedly, but no one answered. Eventually, I learned that my son had been taken to 26th and California for failing to appear in court. During that time, I was terrified. It felt as though my son had disappeared. And given our prior experience with the police, including the aggressive way they showed a picture of my son in the middle of the night, I wasn't sure if I would ever see him again.
Es fundamentalmente que los documentos del Departamento de Policía en Chicago se proporcionen en el idioma apropiado. En mi caso, deberían haber sido traducidos al español. Además, como madre, debería los policías informarme cómo localizar a mi hijo, cuando son arrestados, la familia necesita recibir información escrita que explique dónde se encuentran detenidos, su ser querido y cómo localizarlo. Y la información debe estar disponible en varios idiomas. Por último, no se deben utilizar a los adolescentes, niños, niñas y las familias. Los familiares actúan como intérpretes ante la policía. Nunca está bien.
It is crucial that CPD documents are provided in the appropriate language. In my case, they should have been translated into Spanish. Also, as a mother, I should have been informed how to locate my son. When arrested, the family needs to receive written information explaining where their loved one is being held and how to locate them. And information must be available in multiple languages. Lastly, children and family members should not be expected to serve as interpreters with the police. It's never okay.
No importa si es una conversación, es informal con la policía, basada en las comunidades de color. Las cosas pueden escalar muy rápidamente. El Departamento de Policía de Chicago, en Chicago, claramente no debe pedir a los niños ni a sus familiares que traduzcan en ninguna situación. Gracias.
It doesn't matter if it's an informal conversation with the police. Things can escalate very quickly. The LEP policy should say clearly that police should not ask children or family members to translate in any situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't think there can be any dispute about the need for effective communication. And I really appreciate Ms. Alde's description of her family's own situation. That's useful, and it's a good illustration of the need for this. Let's turn to Dr. Davis right now, though.
Hey, this is Dr. Davis. My last correspondence with you, I was sent to you and Maggie Hinckley. And there has not been an investigation regarding this fraudulent, fictitious contract that was done within the police department, procurement department. And I'm asking for an efficient and effective investigation. The inspector general has not done anything. The police department IAD has not done anything because Hope referred him to the police department. They refused to do an investigation and no one contacted me. Alderman Pat Dowles, he sent a correspondent letter to the inspector general in regards to this fraudulent contract with a fourth signature of Mayor Daley, fraud federal certifications. This contract was not recorded in the clerk's office. And as a result, I was discharged as a police by a fraudulent company. And it started within the police department. And if Maggie's talking about transparencies, hey, investigate this here. What do I need to do for you to start an investigation about this fraud contract that had me discharged as a police, wrongfully discharged as a police officer? My name has been smeared. I went to law school, got my law degree. I went to the Office of Inspector General Academy Federal, and I want to move on. Everywhere I go, it comes up, you know. So my question to you, Maggie and Judge, how can the Inspector General and Attorney General's Office and Internal Affairs, why not they do an investigation in regards to this here? COPA did their investigation. They referred it to the IAD. They refused to do anything. So I'm asking to help me. I need help. You know, I'm not an attorney. I didn't take the bar exam. However, I have my law degree, but I need some help. And every time I send a correspondence to the mayor, he never gets it. You know, and it seems like someone has their foot on my back. You know what I'm saying? And I've been affected by this for years, trying to clear my name. And I'm asking again for an effective, efficient investigation. Alderman Pat Dowles referred it to the Inspector General's office, the clerk's office. There is nothing in the clerk's office that this contract ever existed. Over $2 million was stolen. $2 million. And as a result, this company got locked up with the help of me. They got charged in the state's attorney's office, Cook County State's attorney's office. They were charged and they were convicted because of their fraudulent activity. So, Maggie, Help me. Transparency, right? Help me. I need your help.
As I've explained, Dr. Davis, and I am very sorry, but under the consent decree, we do not do individual investigations. We are limited by the paragraphs of the consent decree. And so the appropriate venue would be either the Inspector General's Office, COPA, or CPD. And we unfortunately do not have jurisdiction to do individual investigations for individuals. I am very sorry, and I know that you are trying every avenue that you can, but I do want to let you know that we do not have the jurisdiction to do individual investigations.
But in the consent decree, doesn't it say that they have to do an investigation?
We do not do individual. We are monitoring the paragraphs of the consent decree and the CPD and the city's compliance with those paragraphs. We are not, we do not have the jurisdiction over individual investigations. Those are appropriately referred to the Inspector General's Office, COPA, or the CPD.
Oh.
But thank you very much.
Well, there's nothing you can do.
I am sorry. At this point, there's not. I've tried to explain that.
You're the monitoring, right? I mean, your job is to monitor, right? Can you monitor this individual, what they're doing right now? The clerk's office.
As I just explained, I cannot. Yours is an individual complaint that you have regarding the CPD, and individual complaints are reviewed by either the Inspector General, COPA, or the police department specifically. So I apologize that unable to help you in your individual complaint.
Well, I'm going to submit another request for an investigation, and I'm going to send something to the Attorney General's office, as well as the Federal Inspector General's office as well.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Okay. But I did send a correspondent to you, Judge, I guess, and I sent an email to you, I think, a while back in terms of explaining the facts of my circumstances.
Yeah. I understand there are many matters of concern. The consent decree monitoring is what we're focusing on here and what Ms. Hickey is responsible for. And if Aura Elder is available, we'll hear from Aura Elder.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Ms. Elder. I'm happy that you're with us.
I'm happy to be here with you. And the reason I am here is that I'm a member of the NAACP Chicago Southside Executive Committee. Mm-hmm. I am also a retired principal, and I don't like to blabble a lot because of being a retired principal. My concern is a concern that we all know about, our children. We cannot do anything in this world without understanding our children. Therefore, I feel strongly that in order for us to move forward in life, we must be able to communicate with our children and understand their language. I know that adults vote and children don't, but something can be done so that we will be able to understand better what they understand. We talk about different things, but we need the voice of our children. I say voice, not voices. Voice, because if we do not understand their language, how in the world do we expect them to understand our language? When I was a child and also as a teacher, and then I moved on up, I went to the police department, not to do something bad or because I was bad. I went there to understand better. The fire department. How many of our children have ever put their hands on a fire truck? How many of our children have ever spoken to a police officer unless it was something that they supposedly did that wasn't right? It is time for us to use the two eyes the Lord has given us, the nose, and the two ears, because we cannot continue to allow our minds to go on vacation while our mouths work overtime. Why can't we arrange to have in the schools, according to their time limits, officers invited to go into classrooms or assemblies and explain certain issues to young people? But how can you explain if you never listen to them and you don't know the language they speak or the language they understand? I can go on and on and on, but I'm not going to. I just want you to know that the children we have in the classroom now will be grown one day, and they will be making decisions for us. How can you make a decision when you don't understand what it is you're trying to do? I'm not going to go on, but I will say this. We may ask a question and they say maybe, but then we say, when is maybe? The children will say, oh, maybe it's going to be eventually. But we don't know when eventually is. We have to understand the word maybe as a child, as a youth, and eventually. See, we are using language they don't understand clearly. Let us listen to them. Let us invite them to certain conferences. Let them decide who might represent them. I can go on and on, but I'm not going to. All I want to say is what we do in the United States of America must be done for our children, or else someone else grown will take over. That's it.
Thank you, Ms. Elder. I appreciate this, and I appreciate your involvement.
You're welcome, and thank you.
I think the next person on the list is Chelsea Robinson. And again, we're very early for Chelsea Robinson, so if that person's not available, I can certainly understand that we can start again in a little while. That's better.
And Your Honor, we did not give specific times to people. You know what I mean? We just gave them the number speaker that they were. So
okay, great. All right. Well, is Chelsea Robinson with us? Or yeah, I mean, there are several other people I'm going to recall in a moment. I know that Mr. McLaughlin is not available until 3:30. So if we're finished well before then, we can reconvene at 3:30 to hear from him.
We did also explain to Mr. McLaughlin that the hearing might finish earlier because we didn't have as many speakers and that we would call him last, but we could not guarantee that we could
wait until 3:30.
3:30, and that he was welcome to provide written comments if the hearing didn't last until 3:30.
Great. Okay. So Ms. Robinson and Ms. Joshua, again, you are welcome. If you prefer not to speak, that's fine. Anybody who would like to be heard but would prefer to put their comments in writing, you're most welcome to do that. We're here to listen to you in any way you want to be heard, whether it's in person or on the camera, or whether you would just prefer to put it in writing. That's a better way to communicate for many people.
Your Honor, this is Alexandra Block in the Communities United Room. I believe we have somebody named Yolanda Andruso who asked to be heard as well. Anthony, are you here on the Zoom?
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me. First, I want to say thank you for the opportunity to speak at this public hearing regarding the City of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department's progress with the dissent decree. My name is Yolanda Androzo, and I am the executive director of One Aim Illinois, the largest grassroots coalition working to protect Chicago communities and families from firearm violence. We recognize the critical role of law enforcement in our coalition and support their efforts to protect our communities from gun violence. Ensuring accountability and transparency in police actions is crucial to gun violence prevention and building trust between communities impacted by gun violence. But I've had the honor of working with several survivors of gun violence. To name a few, Sherry Nolan of Saving Ourselves, Eric Wilkins of Broken Wings and Communities United, and Delphine Cherry of TY Foundation. And they will tell you that the trauma that gun violence brings is never ending. Unfortunately, unjust and unwarranted police violence play a part in that trauma. We believe the consent decree is an important part of police reform and accountability in Chicago, addressing the critical need for fair and just law enforcement practices. We urge the speedy implementation of the consent decree to foster a safer Chicago and build that trust between law enforcement and the communities they serve. I also want to say that I speak from a personal perspective. The experience of a police officer who saved my mother's life when I was only a child, and another who injured my brother unjustly when he was a teen. So I understand the role law enforcement plays in both saving lives and the need for police reform and accountability. Thank you for allowing me to speak. And I support all the advocates and all the people working on this decree.
Thank you, Mr. Andrelso, Ms. Andrelso. I appreciate your comments. All right. Well, I think we've heard from everybody, every member of the public who is available and wants to be heard. I think we've given them that opportunity. The final matter on our agenda today was closing remarks from the monitor and perhaps also from the police department and the United States Attorney General. The Illinois Attorney General. Why don't we turn to those closing remarks right now, beginning with the monitor?
I just wanted to thank everyone who spoke today. We appreciate it very much, and we will do our best to get in touch with those who had signed up to speak but were unable to attend and let them know about their ability to provide written comments. But again, I just wanted to thank everyone today for their very thoughtful remarks.
All right. Thank you. Any further word from the Attorney General?
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to summarize some of the themes we heard from all of the speakers today, and again, offer our thanks for the candor and the commitment and the time to give everyone's perspective to the court and the monitoring team and our office and the police department. I think we heard some feedback about the DNC, both from the independent monitoring team's observations and from a protester who was on the ground. And we urge the department, as they are doing after-action reviews and considering ways to self-correct and always be improving, to consider that feedback. And similarly, Your Honor, we heard a lot of feedback about the limited English proficiency policy, also about the department's interactions with youth and with children. And because of paragraph 52 of the consent decree, these policies in particular are ones where not only is there broad community engagement, but there's a requirement that there is community engagement with people and organizations who have experience in these areas of policing and interactions with the community. So I hope that the department hears these recommendations. Our office has certainly heard them. And as these policies move forward, we hope to see changes reflective of this input. And where the changes are not possible, that there is a feedback loop between the department and the community. So thank you again, Your Honor, and monitoring team for holding this meeting, and thank you all for speaking today.
Thank you, Ms. Grebe. Will I be hearing from anyone at the city?
Just briefly, Your Honor, just thank you to everyone for participating, and we did hear your comments, and I see that Superintendent Snelling has turned his camera on, and so I believe he has some closing remarks for the city. Thank you.
Good.
Yep. Thank you again for the meeting. I heard everyone on the call, as did everyone from CPD. You know, the only way we get better is to look back at some of the things that have gone wrong. And we do that every time we create new training. We have to. We have to look at the past. We have to look at the history and think about what we can do better. One of the comments that I heard was about access to attorneys for the arrestees. And I can tell you, just having boots on the ground, being there myself, all of our legal observers who were out there, even myself, I personally made sure that they had access to those people who were being arrested to get their names. We also had public defenders at the site location where the arrests were being processed. Those are the types of things that we look at past practices, and we know that we can do better. And hearing the comments today, obviously, we're going to take everything into consideration because, you know, our lived experiences are different, and we can't discount or dismiss someone's lived experience because it's not ours. So we're just taking everything into consideration here. We just really appreciate it.
Hey, Chelsea, I didn't sign up. How are they asking me?
Okay. I think she's off mute by then. So what I will say is that we are in the process of an after action. Obviously, we have to do that. And again, like I said, when the call started, we're not spiking the football. We will be using this to apply to all aspects of the consent decree, how we interact with people, because this is a model moving forward. I believe it's a model moving forward on how we interact, how we develop our officers, how we treat each other, and how we go about our day-to-day business. So this is a great launching point, and it's not only a great launching point for what we're going to do within the consent decree, but the partnerships that I think has been developed with the IMT and the OAG, and even having the conversations with members of the coalition. And I heard Krista, and she's right. That was the purpose of having the meeting, was to make sure that we started that relationship, that we have these conversations, that we hear each other, and then we get to know each other better and we can understand. So I just feel like we're on the right course, we're seeing progress. And I just really appreciate the partnership of everyone on the call. And I definitely have to thank my leadership team for being out there and making sure that they're leading by example. So thank you, everyone, for your partnership. And thank you for everyone who had comments today. They were heard.
Great. Thank you. And I do know that Ms. Joshua is now with us. And Ms. Joshua, I don't want to cut you off. If you'd like to make a statement, you're welcome to.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Rose Joshua, and I'm the president of the Chicago South Side. I didn't want to make any comments other than we were working on the area where there are police interaction with youth. We initially testified about that. And when we were reviewing the information online, we got a draft of the policy that was adopted and found out that I believe something was passed in December of 2023. So I think for that part of the consent decree, I think that the Chicago Police Department has complied. It's just that, you know, the consent decree is 236 pages long, and it is up to us, the community, to analyze to see whether those paragraphs apply in our community, and it works, and we have great outcomes. And so we've been talking about some ideas that we would like to do, and you know, the most important thing is that we understand each other. When we understand each other, not only as a person, but the structure and how the police department is carrying out the mandate of the consent decree. So on that note, I'm just going to stop. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
I'm glad you were with us, Ms. Joshua. I appreciate your comments. And I appreciate your interest in the consent decree and our progress. It really is very, very helpful. Okay, I think that concludes the hearing today, unless somebody was to tell me that there's something else that I'm missing. And with that, I think we are going to recess, and I'll see you all again in October.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.